This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
Hot off the heels of last night's Flat Earth debate, we bring you part two, where tonight, Dr. Joshua Bowen will be going against Bill Ludlow in a Flat Earth epic match. Gentlemen, are we ready?
I'm ready.
Bowen's ready.
Hi, Dad. My daddy.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. One quick thing to say about last night, though. If you didn't know this, no concepts didn't show. We had to bring in two other flat earthers. However, if you go to No Concepts channel today, he has deleted all of his flat earth videos and his avatar says it's round. So very ominous. And I think maybe we can finally declare an absolute 100% no ifs, ands, or buts about it victory. There it is. So congratulations, Reds. You did it last night. We're going to talk about a really cool and important news article to start out with, and then we'll bring on Michael, who was part of Lord Rael's cult, I guess would be the correct word to use. Right, Dr. Bowen? Would you consider them a cult or religious?
Yeah, I mean, I think they would probably fit that standard. That they would refer to themselves as a congregation of Lord Rael. But yeah,
got it. And real quickly, Friday, I know you people have been asking, Friday is the climate change talk where Dr. Peter Ward will be here to go over some things that are happening with the climate. November the 5th, Sargon of Akkad versus Adam Kokesh. That's going to be good. And then the thing everybody's been asking about, November the 8th, Isaac Arthur, who is a science educator and YouTuber, he will be coming to talk about the ability to upload minds one day. So you could get tired of your body, your experiences, and everything that's inside of your brain can will be able to be uploaded to like a disc, I guess, and then plugged right into a new body. So can't wait for that. And then on November the 15th, Aaron Robb will take on Jason King on Creation versus Intelligent Design. So, yeah, I will now turn it over to Steve, who will introduce the article, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, so about a month ago or so, there was a thing on the Arizona School District where a lady named Diane Douglas had tried to somehow get around the whole Supreme Court not allowing creationism and intelligent design to be taught in the school system. And so she had basically had a proposal, or tried to do a proposal, to incorporate intelligent design into the Arizona School District's curriculum, which had gloriously backfired, as Bill Lolo here has been pointing out today. So I had him to come on and see if he can kind of tell us what exactly happened there and why did it backfire so spectacularly.
Well, yeah, hi, Bill, it was awesome.
I miss you.
Bill, you're welcome. Hey, hi. yeah, Diane Douglas is a real right-wing conservative Christian, was elected to the as a state superintendent of schools here in Arizona. It's an elected position. Things like changes to our the Board of Education can recommend changes to school standards without having this put to a vote to the public. So it's a real important position in that, you know, they can actually change school standards based on just that little board, you know, voting on it. And what happened was they tried to bring in watered down standards that removed the words evolution. You know, anything to do with the theory of evolution. They brought in a young earth creationist from a local Christian college to give recommendations from the board. And then they adopted what was called, I think, the Hillsdale standard. It was out of Michigan. And the wording, again, was real vague. It was watered down. This is what they were going to propose that we adopt here in Arizona, which opens the door for creationism or intelligent design to be brought in because it doesn't require people to teach evolution, really, as the only thing. So backlash on this was huge. You know, Arizona is a real conservative state. I mean, I live in an almost exclusively Mormon neighborhood here. They're awesome neighbors. But, I mean, very, very conservative. And this type of thing is something we've fought against for a long time here. It doesn't seem to make national news in places like Kentucky, like, you know, we see that. But we do fight against this right on this type of thing a lot. This time, people just mobilized. I mean, we had the Secular Alliance for Arizona, the Secular Coalition, even the Arizona Atheist Facebook group. I'm a member of, you know, just maybe 800 people. But I mean, people really mobilized. People wrote in. You know, they made it public. It was just comment sections of everything. People talking about it. You know, mailing email campaigns. There was a website where you could leave comments on there. It wasn't public comments, but it went directly to the people on the board. And there was just a real concentrated effort to get the word out that this wasn't acceptable. And it worked. Diane Douglas was not, she lost in the primary. We had, I believe, originally 4 or 5 Republican candidates for the position of the, you know, school board superintendent. And all but one of them wanted creationism, thought that it was okay to teach creationism in the science class. All of those lost. And one of the reasons they lost were they were, I mean, basically hounded by people and being exposed as, you know, this is not right. And the guy that did win the primary for the Republicans, Frank Riggs, and I personally went back and forth with him several times, just in messages and letters and you know, emails. And he is not for teaching creationism in science class, but he still believes it should be taught in history class. So, you know, he's kind of got around, okay, I'm not going to say it should be taught in science, but we should teach it in history, which I don't know how right. You apply creationism to history.
I'm not sure how that's so, history.
Yeah.
But
so,
what is historical anyway, about that? I don't know.
Yeah, well, this is moving out of science.
We've been really, you know, active in just kind of exposing what it is that they want to do. So what happened? What happened was today there was a vote. 6-4. It was still closer than I would have liked to have seen. But what happened, 6-4 was approving these new standards. The standards that Douglas proposed didn't even get a son would second the people. They were afraid exactly what Republican can.
Is he breaking up?
Hang on. You're breaking up too much for us. You're starting to break up.
We didn't get any of that.
Try again.
Have I got connection problem? Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe I don't know what it was.
So they took a vote 6-4.
Yes. Yeah, so 6-4. I think board members were scared after they saw what happened to the candidates in the primary who supported creationism. And they could not even, she didn't even get a second. Now, the 6-4 vote was in favor of these new standards that were brought by the Arizona Science Teachers Association. The original standards proposed, the original revised standards proposed by Diane Douglas, didn't even get a motion. She didn't even get a second to her motion. She wasn't even able to bring it in front of the board. So instead, they passed revised standards, which were actually better than what we had in the past. And they specifically say, if I can bring up the article here, they specifically, the wording used was the unity and diversity of organisms living and extinct result of evolution. And for Arizona, that's huge. That is really huge. So, you know, again, we had a concerted, concentrated, you know, very strong effort on the part of the secular coalition, on the part of even Christians who didn't want to see creationism taught in or intelligent design taught in science class. Everybody got together. They made it be known that it wasn't acceptable. The woman who proposed it didn't make the primary. She's gone at the end of this year. Her motion to bring it in front of the school board wasn't seconded, and we got better standards adopted in the end because of this. So
I can't imagine it being a bigger win, especially in such a in such a conservative type right. area as Arizona. I mean, if, Arizona and Texas, you would, and some of the backwards states that nobody wants to live in, like North Carolina, I would expect that kind of stuff, right?
That is accurate. Yeah. That is accurate.
If this can happen in those states, then there is hope for humanity. And when I saw that posted, and I wanted to bring you on, I wanted to touch on this a little bit because I think this was a huge win, and I thank you for coming on, Bill, and kind of giving us more detail on it.
Glad to do it. Bill, we look forward to having you on a full episode sometime.
Yeah, yeah. I got some stuff coming up, the track discoveries I've been working on. We've documented 90 sets of 270-million-year-old pre-dinosaur reptile tracks now up on the Mogollon Rim. It's turned into one of the most concentrated sites in Arizona, if not the whole Southwest, for these pre-dinosaur reptile tracks. And I was up working on that this last week with the U.S. Forest Service and the Southwest Paleo Society here, collecting more data. And we're still collecting a lot of data. I was given a 5-year permit by the federal government to study that recently. And because of that, I can't disclose exact locations, but we will be sharing information as it becomes, becomes available.
Thank you, sir.
We can't wait to hear that. All right. Thank you, Bill.
All right. My surrogate daddy.
Thank you. Yep.
Sorry, get that in. Bill Ludlow and Ken Hovind still remain, that debate still remains to be one of the all-time classics. So if you haven't checked that out, head over to Steve McCray's channel after this show, of course, and watch Bill Ludlow.
I'll link it later for you guys.
So let's get into what we're here to talk about tonight. And I want to say a quick hello to Michael and Dr. Bowen. Hello to both of you. And to kind of familiarize ourselves with what we're going to be focusing on, I pulled a clip of Lord Rael just to play a couple seconds of it so we could hear exactly what we're going to be talking about. So, Dave?
My children, I am Rael. I am your king, and I am your lord, and I have arrived, as promised, to reclaim the throne of my father.
Okay. We can stop right there.
Okay.
Michael, did he, in fact, reclaim the throne from his father?
Well, I'm just going to have to say no on that one.
Aha. Uh-huh. Man, yeah. I was really hoping you would go for yes. So let's introduce you officially to everyone. Why don't you tell people who you are, what you do, and how you kind of became involved in Lord Rael's group? And then I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Bowen to take us through a couple questions, and we'll go from there. So whenever you're ready.
Sure. Well, basically, this all happened about a year ago. Let's see. Basically, I was in the Marine Corps, enjoyed 7 years of service, and at the end, you know, I get come back to civilian life. Then I go back in the reserves when I'm in the desert for a couple of months, you know, I started thinking about God and things like that. Could he be real? I want to investigate. I want to find out the truth. I've never proven it to myself at this point. Why not find some proof? So I went on a journey, a little spiritual journey. When I came back from the desert back home, started doing some research, read a testimonial every day. Several Christians, they've somehow found Jesus. Can I imitate them and replicate some of the things they do and find Jesus too? Well, turns out everyone has their own special and tragic way to find Jesus. Someone dies, they found Jesus. Something miraculous happens, they find Jesus, and I can't copy all that, so I decided I need to find him my own way, is what I thought. So I do some research, and I find, you know, there's one place in Tennessee that is very strange compared to all the other churches, at least. One pastor who is creating his own Bible, for instance. I've never heard of a pastor creating their own Bible. And I thought he was preaching some interesting things, and he had a list of false doctrines that seemed agreeable to me. So I went down there. Anyway, I was there for a couple of months, and I learned a little bit about how to make a Bible, how he gets his sources, things like that. But then again, I started noticing that he has settled on what he thought. He has settled on his perception on what is the truth. He's like the other Christians in that he has stopped searching. And as a truth seeker, you should never stop searching. It's my personal opinion. I never stopped searching. I never settled. I was never satisfied. And I just felt like Christianity didn't have all the answers. I felt like I need to dig deep and find out what's the mystery. So eventually, I started, my spare time witnessing. If I see something strange online, I need to witness. I need to figure out what's going on. Apparently, one day I kind of crossed the line. I went to the congregation of Rael. And I basically spent the entire day. As soon as I met them, I'm like, wow, yep, they're lost. Gotta get these people out of this cult. Gotta get them out. This is not happening. Not on my watch. I gotta start witnessing right now. So the moment I woke up, I encountered this. I was typing all day. My pastor was so mad at me. He's like, what are you doing typing there all day? Basically, I spent the night there on the Sabbath day, came back the next day, I encountered that group, and my heart was set. I am going to witness all day until at least one person leaves that congregation. I am not going to stop. And so,
and how many have left?
None. Maybe me?
None.
I haven't left, really. So no one's left.
Now, let me ask you this. Was there a point where you actually started to believe as they did, or was your involvement in the group always a sort of trying to counter what they did?
Well, I'll say this. It's impossible for me to throw everything into a soundbite in terms of my story, but I have experienced many synchronicities in my ever since I started this journey. And certain synchronicities, like... for instance, I sent something to Josh about a synchronicity about this very show, which if I could somehow go to desktop mode, I'd show you. Basically, one of the synchronicities was I'm reading an article doing some research on what language did Jesus really speak? What was he speaking? So I was browsing some forums, and in big bold letters in the forums was non sequitur. Something that I don't expect. I'm not thinking about the show. I'm not researching for the show. I'm just researching for myself. I see that there. I'm like, wow, maybe I should talk about this during the show. So I experienced those types of synchronicities. When I was at, when I entered Lord Ryle's congregation, how it started was I saw it as wrong initially, gut instinct, this is wrong. What they're teaching seems sound at first, but there's something about it, something about it. But what kept me there was certain things that I had seen, like say the Anunnaki and ancient aliens and maybe other esoteric things that they had esoteric elements about them, that I was against them in a way, but I didn't want to go completely against them because I felt like they had some seeds of truth. Like Anunnaki, that, you know, they could be real. Ancient aliens, they could be real. Mm. Now, if they went all out and you started talking about ancient aliens from Palenque and maybe all the other things that the ancient aliens show has spoken about, maybe I would have been hook, line, and sinkered. Mm. But they basically just stuck with the Sumerian approach, and I guess they just left it at that. Lord Ryle is, I guess, Enlil, and you know, they basically stuck with that.
That's a good starting point. Let's bring in a Sumerian expert, our senior Sumerian correspondent.
Our senior Sumerian correspondent.
There we go.
Dr. Bowen, do you kind of want to so that everybody's on the same page, walk through what he means by the Anunnaki, and then I'm going to let you, I know you have some questions ready, and I'll let you go ahead and start with those. That'd be a good starting point.
Yeah, sure. So just by way of quick introduction, I'm Dr. Josh with Digital Hammurabi, and Megan and I, who is in the other room listening, to the stream, we run a channel about the ancient Near East, and so Sumerian and Akkadian and ancient Mesopotamia, it's sort of our wheelhouse. So we have PhDs from Johns Hopkins University. Megan's almost done hers. I finished mine about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. So, you know, reading Sumerian, reading Akkadian, these mythological texts, it's what we love. It's what we do. So, of course, I have a master's degree in Old Testament studies from a Capital Bible Seminary, and then I have a minor in Hebrew Bible as well. So I the Lord Ryle congregation, which is sort of an amalgamation, a mixing of both Christianity and ancient Mesopotamian religion, is custom made almost for me. So it's interesting, given my background educationally, it was surprising to me that I'd never heard of Zachariah Sitchin and this whole thing with the Anunnaki, because, of course, I'm very, very familiar with those mythological texts. As an aside, I have just finished a presentation, a critique of Zachariah Sitchin's 12th Planet, which I'll be putting into video format, hopefully within the next month or so. So look forward to that.
Where did you first hear about Sitchin? Where did you first hear about Zachariah?
It was actually, I think it might have been you, Kyle.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
How was it that I knew about Zachariah Sitchin back in the 80s? I remember.
You're welcome, vividly. Dr. Bowen.
Velikovsky and Sitchin were very popular topics back in the 80s.
Yeah, yeah. I just lived under a rock, apparently.
I don't get it, because in the 1980s, Zachariah Sitchin and Velikovsky were two very big topics of discussion back then.
Well, he was probably born in the 80s.
Kids. 79. Kids these days. I got socks older than you.
Nice. I don't remember actually where I came across Lord Ryle's. It might have actually just been a YouTube video of his, but at any rate, I know where it was. Sorry, we did a video on this channel actually. Megan and I did, and what is her name? Michael, you might remember her name. She's with this group. One of the very nice
Kelly?
Women.
Or Amy?
Kelly Patrick. Yeah. That's right. Kelly Patrick.
Yes. I know her. Okay.
Yeah. She commented on the video and just left a link to one of her videos. And so I watched it. And then, of course, I contacted her. And she agreed to come on the Non Sequitur at first and do, Michael, what you're doing right now. And just kind of explain what it is that the congregation believes. Angelus Domini, who is, the angel of the Lord, angel of our Lord, who is Lord Rael's emissary, spokesman, whatever, sort of shut that down. I ended up conversing with him, just trying to get some more details about what it is that they believe. In short, and Michael, please, if you want to correct me on any of this, please do so. Essentially, Lord Rael, his name is Raymond Elwood. I think he lived in Chicago originally. And
That's how he got Rael? Taking the Ra from Raymond and El from Elwood?
Yeah,
I'll interject here for a second. I don't think his name was originally Elwood, but he may have had his name changed because he's got the word Howie in his name somehow. Howard.
Hmm. Interesting.
So there is I have a link to someone who's done the research on him trying to expose him. So he had his criminal records, so that's how he knows.
That's interesting because usually when people change their name, they change it to something like more pizzazzy and, Elwood, changing it to Elwood would just—it's just very vanilla, Rael. Too vanilla.
Well, he needed to. Well, for me, if he did change his name and that's what he did, it would be the only way to make it fit the prophecies.
Hmm.
Aha. I see.
Well,
carry on, Dr. Bowen.
So, essentially, is it? January 28th, 2011, I think is when it was. There's a light that was supposed to have descended over Jerusalem, and you can find the YouTube video. It's apparently been concluded that it was doctored, but nonetheless, it's supposed to be this light that was Jesus returning as in something like Matthew 24, the second coming. But that light then quickly leaves and apparently goes to Chicago. And descends upon Lord Rael, and he became. So there's a. I don't want to say he's the new Jesus, but because he wouldn't say that, what he would say is that there's a spirit of God that has descended upon different people throughout history, and Jesus was one of these people, and it's the spirit of the Sumerian god Enlil. So you have three big gods at the top of the Sumerian pantheon. You have An, Enlil, and Enki. And, of course, their Akkadian names are Anu, Enlil, and Ea. But Enlil, the spirit of Enlil, is what descended upon the person Jesus and made him divine. Also, I don't want to spoil it, but ultimately descended upon Raymond Elwood, making him Lord Rael. Now, there's a video.
He's Jesus Reloaded.
I'm not getting. That's right. Now, I'm not getting what I'm getting ready to say from my own intuition or from my own conclusions. There's a video by William Scoggins, who is one of the clergy, I guess you would say, in the group.
Yeah.
Because there's a question about that video that we saw with Lord Rael speaking. His accent is interesting. And, of course, my wife is from the U.K., and I played it for her, and I said, what region of the UK is that? And she said, I have no idea. That doesn't,
that doesn't sound like a real accent. I am sorry. That accent is fake. That is not a real accent. I
take a dollar. Steve, though, it's, they would argue that it's not. There's a video.
They can argue that one of the people, never wrong.
Well,
Dr. Bowen, before you say that, let me, Dave, you don't have to play, like, show the video, but play just him talking again real quick so that we can hear what he sounds like one more time.
Let me rewind this a bit here.
It's like an amalgamation of like three different types of accents thrown into one, like I'm running a blender and I'm
This is a.
It can just be.
This guy's a anywhere. Hot mess.
My children, I am Rael. I am your king, and I am your lord.
I am your lord.
And I have arrived.
Lord,
as I have promised. Arrived. As promised.
To reclaim.
Okay, you can stop it now, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, he's like trying to do Hamlet or something.
It is now your time to ask us questions.
Yeah.
And to further
ask
explain
now,
where this accent is coming from.
There's something interesting. Something I should mention about that video, though, or at least the accent. William Scoggins has made a follow-up response as to why he sounds like that. Would you like to hear why?
Drugs?
I would love to hear why, sir.
Now, this is not my opinion. This is what he said in his sermon, which I happen to be interested in at the time. He said that before when he was Jesus, he reincarnated into someone else before he became Raymond Elwood. That someone else was King Arthur, apparently. So he
apparently
was King Arthur.
Yep.
Yes,
makes
and,
a lot
and
of
now,
sense now.
And then basically he went from Jesus to King Arthur to Raymond, and then he said when he became Raymond, the past life regression had an effect on his accent.
Totally.
That's
legit
the explanation.
Yep, I
guess.
This
makes total sense to me, sir. I am just going to talk like this for the rest of the episode.
So that's his explanation.
Okay, but please tell me that someone took the opportunity to use this and ask him how the hell he got Excalibur out of the rock.
Now here's the interesting thing, though. When he did that response, this is something that they usually do, but they didn't do it for this one. They always throw Torah codes at us, but they didn't give us a King Arthur Torah code. That would have been a lovely thing to see, but they did not give us that.
Those exist? What's a Torah code?
That's actually how I originally found Raymond Elwood when I was witnessing.
Let's hold off on that then, because I'm sure Dr. Bowen has that kind of mapped in his line of questioning. So I don't want to get ahead of him.
Oh, yes.
Remember, strange women lying in ponds, distributing swords, no bases for a system of government.
Power is mandated by the masses, not some from vast aquatic ceremony.
Can't we all just talk like English people for the rest of this episode? I think it'd be such love, such a good time. No? Okay. Carry on, Dr. Bowen, carry on.
So I suppose... given that you, so let me ask you just so that we're all on the same page here. Where are you now, Michael? I mean, you know, you've said that you came in initially, and I remember watching you do it because I was there in the chat or in the whatever it is. It's a VK group.
Oh yeah,
and I remember watching you do it. You came in full force. And I remember Angelus Domini, what I consider probably to be very, very high up in this group, blocking you at one point because of what you were saying.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember thinking, well, good on you, because, you know, this is that you're bringing up excellent points. And then the next day, you joined. So can you tell me about that? Like, what was it?
Yes. So I'll explain that.
Yeah.
Well, you see, there was something about the Congregation of Lord Rael I knew it was a complete lie. I knew it was a cult. And I was throwing them all my questions. I know the scriptures, but they cannot refute anything that I've given them. So I've given them at least 100 questions. And they respond, oh, we're working on these questions. We're going to give you the answers. Months have gone by. No answers. The Christ, I've donated some money to him, but just so I can throw a question at him to see, because at the PayPal link, you can add a comment. I was like, let's see here. If I throw money at him and add a question to the comment, will he respond then? No response. So basically no response from the so-called Christ. Basically, I was going to leave, but I just felt like I wasn't done with them yet. But moreover, I felt like I wasn't done with convincing myself that everything that they were believing was a lie. I felt like there was some truth there. So I decided to stick around to figure out what it was. Because when I initially came in, I believed that everything that they were teaching was a lie. And as I was researching, because they're like, research us, prove us wrong. And I'm like, challenge accepted, we'll do, I'm going to do it. And I realized that some of the things that they were teaching was correct, which I thought was wrong, but I found out was actually right. But turns out, some things. Jesus' name, his name is not actually Jesus. According to the Hebraic Mater Lectionis, the official Mothers of Tongue reading of how you pronounce his name, it's actually Yeshua. But, you know, there's debates about this, but sure. I can show you, I can get into that a little bit later. But that was just one of those things that I found out was true. And it would have taken 10 congregations and 10 pastors to convince me that his name wasn't Jesus. I basically had to do the research on my own to find that out.
Well, I don't think the letter J even existed when they wrote the Bible. Isn't that correct, Dr. Bowen?
That's correct, yeah. So.
Sure.
And tell us, Dr. Bowen, so that because I'm curious myself, how big is this organization? Like, how many people follow Lord Rael, and where are they coming from? How does he get followers?
That's tough. I'm not sure. So their VK group is what, Michael, about 90?
90.
But if you go to their Facebook group. Okay.
It's large.
But I mean, I'm assuming that's like the core group, but you know, Facebook seems to have, I'm not a big Facebook person, but it seemed like they had many, many more followers, but I don't know. Maybe you have more of an inside scoop on that than I do.
Not entirely, because I don't use Facebook that much myself. And I think what they're doing is whenever they post to Facebook, it gets sent automatically to their VK somehow.
I think this is important to stress, Dr. Bowen. Like, can you kind of tell everyone what the lady did that joined that up and sold everything? Like, you know, they get rid of their earthly possession. Like, talk a little bit about that so that people know, which people are committed.
Yeah. So maybe this is this is important just as a general understanding. So, you know, what they're doing is they're taking what many would consider to be just fundamental mainstream Christianity to some degree and adding this Mesopotamian religion to it and connecting the two. So if you listen to what they say, it sounds like, so there are a lot of times it actually sounds very mainstream. But of course, they believe that there's a man named Richard Ruff. Richard Ruff found out of late that he is actually Enki, revivified, one of the three gods of the top senior gods of the pantheon, Sumerian pantheon. There are apparently other deities that haven't let us know who they are yet. And one of the primary messages is that Lord Rael Enlil is getting ready to bring judgment. And that judgment is coming in the form of the aliens in their spaceships who are out at the outer rim of our solar system, who are essentially ready to fire whenever Lord Rael gives the command.
I think he did when he spoke. His voice is the weapon, right?
That's complicated. There are videos about this. I'm getting this all from the videos that they have posted. Lord Rael can think certain things and make things happen. So it's actually very physical in that sense, like material. It's there's some natural explanation for what he's doing. But you know, they adhere to this idea that these ancient aliens, the Anunnaki, were the gods, just in that sense, they're very much in line with Sitchin. And those gods are waiting at the outer rim of our solar system, ready to, Nibiru is going to come
you know, come close. And in other words, judgment is coming, right? Lord Rael is bringing judgment upon America in particular, right? The Babylon, the great Babylon, the harlot. Right. So he has called for an exodus. And I can't, it was sometime maybe in the last year or so, I'm not sure. Can't remember, but called for an exodus of all believers from America, and they traveled down to Baja. You know, there are videos about this.
An exodus
this
to Baja.
Woman,
That's a vacation, not an exodus.
Well, I maybe now. Initially, Kelly Patrick seems to be a very genuine person. If anybody is duped, I think that she is, but I think that she genuinely believes this. But she has videos where she's talking herself, and you know, she had a landscaping business out west. It was apparently fairly successful. And when Lord Rael said, time to go, Exodus, she had to sell it. And they moved down to essentially a compound where there was no running water. You know, they're lighting fires outside to cook things. I mean, it was apparently, you know, pretty bad for at least a little while. And of course, it appears from the videos that things have gotten better of late. But, you know, so Michael, maybe you could talk a little bit about that, because I remember you talking about how, you know, maybe you were going to go get ready to go to Baja. So maybe you could talk about that, or what motivated that, what maybe changed your mind. If you wouldn't mind talking about that.
So I remember my mind set the time. I did pray some prayers because I was still, even though I had left my previous congregation and entered a new one, which was Lord Rael's congregation, I was still in the Christian mode. I still felt like I still need to pray for everything, for guidance. So I was thinking or praying, hey, if he's the Christ, please let me know. Please, God, let me know he's the Christ. Send me a sign like you usually do. And so I thought I received some sort of sign. I was reading one of their documents, and I found out apparently Raymond's name, or Ray L, has to do with, Amun-Ra. Like, it's Amun-Ra is a derivation of it somehow. And I
knew Amun-Ra was involved.
Amun-Ra is a god among men, so
I knew it.
So here's the interesting thing. It kind of struck me that could have been a derivation, and that was only 30 minutes after the prayer, because not even days before, I was going to start a new diet called the Amun-Ra diet, or basically it was called the Amun diet, but the doctor that founded it, his name was Amun-Ra. So I thought that was a sign. So I was like, you know, I guess you're
the Amun-Ra diet. I'm just curious.
Top ramen. A lot of top ramen.
Is it? Please tell me it's ramen noodles.
No. We're talking about Egyptian Amun-Ra, not ramen. Amen, like damn. Amen.
Got it.
So basically, I thought that was a sign. So I was like, okay, I guess you're the Christ. So I guess I got to start thinking about packing.
Take that as a sign. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm thinking about packing, but I'm still skeptical. I was like, Christ, I don't think that's good enough. Are you sure? Is he really it? Is he the one? So I was like, I need more confirmation.
It's funny that you keep saying Christ when in referencing if you're trying to figure out if this guy's really Jesus or not.
I have to use the word Christ because I'm not sure if Rael is the actual Christ. So I'm like, okay, I can't use actual names
now. That's what makes it,
I can't say Jesus because I just learned that was wrong. Yeshua, I'm not comfortable enough with that name yet. So, and Rael just sounds weird. So I'm just going to
just go the last Christ name. It's fine. Last name's fine.
So eventually after 2 weeks, I was almost going to make my final decision until someone decided to slip in the congregation. Someone decided to make a prophecy. His name was Michael something. They're like, oh, we got to make that exodus now. It's going to happen. There's going to be an asteroid. It's going to strike very soon. It's going to be in like September like 18th or 17th, like that. It's going to strike. If you're not out of America by then, you're dead. Something like that. He didn't say it in those exact terms, but he alluded in such a strong way. I was like, okay, I could leave now before this supposed asteroid strikes, or I can just wait for the asteroid to strike. And if it doesn't strike, then they're wrong. But if it does strike, then they're right, and I'm dead. So
not an
it
easy,
was a risk.
Not an easy predicament, man.
Yeah, so very tough.
I had some tough decisions to make in life. You win.
That's rough.
So rough. It was kind of a risky decision, but I decided to wait it out. And I'm like, but I decided to throw a prayer onto it as well. It's like, oh Christ, please know that I need to know for sure if you're really true or not. And if I die, then I guess you're the truth, and I'll be with you soon. So
that's a lot of bravery, man. You should have just sent him an email. I hear that you get a lot faster response.
I tried that. I got no response, actually. I even threw money at him. Didn't work. So basically, the asteroid never hit. They said it was just meters away. NASA barely caught it. They found out about an hour before it's almost struck. And then, of course, everyone was silent. No one spoke about it. And I'm looking for that other Michael to make a response video. It's like, sorry about that, guys. False prophecy, my bad. Nothing, just silence. I'm waiting. And then I'm like, no.
He didn't?
It didn't come
Why
true.
Why do people make these prophecies knowing that they're not going to happen?
Right.
A little confused.
I mean, you have already made... That's the thing. You have a ready-made rationale in this situation every time, because you can say, Lord Raya had mercy, right? He decided not to destroy.
No, this was NASA's mercy.
You just gave them an idea. Well, congratulations, Dr.
Oh,
Holy.
Sorry. No, don't do that.
Here's the thing, though, which is interesting. And I'm sure I could find this somehow, because I'm good with text. I write software with text, so I could figure this out. But Rael has said that he has not come here to prophesy, but to fulfill the prophecies. But to have his own members set a prophecy, what does that mean? He's going against his own word.
That's lazy.
So he's not. He hasn't come here to prophesy, but his own people are prophesying, and they're wrong prophecies.
Isn't that like his one job, though? That's your one job as a deity. Like, you prophesy and then you fulfill it. He's just going, nah, I don't feel like doing it anymore. You know what? You guys handle it. Whatever you want, we'll do it. Just make it happen.
Well, no, the beauty is it's provisional. You just do a provisional type prophecy, and then when it doesn't get fulfilled, either the conditions weren't met, or as Dr. Bowen said, you know what? I've showed mercy on my people.
Well, let me tell you something. I did actually mention this. I did actually mention this to the congregation. I created a Rael quiz file. I called it the Rael Quiz of the Century. I'm not sure if any of you have seen it, but it was it's a really amazing file if you guys want to look at it later.
I like you. I like you, Michael. Awesome. I would love to see that. I would love to see that.
Okay. Trust me, I have it. I will send it.
Cool.
But I sent that quiz file. No one responded. Well, actually, someone did respond, but it wasn't good enough. They did not answer any of the questions. They said, good quiz, good questions. We're not ready. We'll get to you soon. Yeah.
Did they ever ask you, or did they ever like respond or put out any kind of like statement or any excuse as to why the asteroid never came? And were there other members of the congregation asking? Because it seems to me, if I'm preparing for an asteroid impact, right, and it doesn't happen, I'm gonna want to know why.
I will tell you their response. They respond by emojis. So they,
the ultimate emoji.
Stop.
So I cannot lie about this. He really did respond with an emoji.
Please tell me what the emojis are. What is a? This is why the apocalypse
winky,
didn't
winky.
Happen emoji. Please tell me.
Well, I don't know if they think this is a joke or if it's like, phew, it just missed. But basically, it missed, And Lord Angelus, okay, you can't call him. Angelus Domini.
So God's aim's off. So God can't aim.
The big guy in charge right after Rael is Angelus Domini. After it happened, he throws up an emoji. Phew, it missed. Something like that. And I was
fantastic.
That's the explanation. Understood. Got it.
So everybody accepted that, though? That's what I'm really looking for. Like, did everybody fall in line after that emoji text? Was that good enough to like quell any kind of uprising for people wanting to answer? Because if that's the case, then that goes a long way in just how brainwashed people can get.
Well, I got to tell you something. The brainwashing is beyond most people's understanding. They're not as active as I am. For me, I'm watching, I'm waiting. I'm looking for the truth here. I'm waiting for the responses. People, everyone else in the congregation, they're passive. They're in, they're out. They maybe spend 10 minutes in that forum, social platform, and then they're gone for the rest of the day. So they are not, basically, when something happens, they're not there to see it. So if someone says, hey, the prophecy is going to be an asteroid, it's going to come, oh, we just missed it. Basically, they're already hook, line, and sinkered, but they were gone for the prophecy and they were gone for the explanation.
So maybe let's talk about, if it's okay, guys.
Sure.
One of the primary sources of – there are two sources of validation that Angelus Domini gave me over and over again. One is these prophecies that they have documented and timestamped that have come true, these predictions about storms that would come and so on and so forth. Michael, as you just pointed out, you know, a particularly big one here with an asteroid did not come true. So I feel like that one's, you know, if I were to actually take the time and go back and try to piece together these prophecies, no one would give me one directly, right? It was just, you can go back and check for yourself. If I were to actually go back and do that, I suspect what we'd have is something similar to what we're talking about here with the asteroid. But the other, and I think probably far more significant piece of information and evidence that is presented really on a regular basis, and we've alluded to it before, are these Torah codes. And Michael, if you want to develop it more, that's fine. I'll give a brief introduction to it. Essentially, this is nothing new. The Bible, the Old Testament was written in the Hebrew language, and originally it was written without spaces in between the words, right? And so what people have done throughout the years is they have lined up all the letters in the Hebrew together, and they would skip. They'd say, let's skip every fifth letter. Every fifth letter. We'll just look at every fifth letter and then write those out. And see what it writes in Hebrew. See if we can find significant words or phrases or prophecies, right? It's like this hidden code in the Hebrew text. Well, a very intelligent and business savvy software designer designed Keys to the Bible, which is a software program that does this for you, right? And you can search for specific things, and it will, you can tell it how to skip, and it will find these secret codes right in the text. And one of the things that they do, and in fact there's one up right now, if you go to the VK site, you'll see their lead page is always, it looks like a crossword puzzle, right? And it's just a bunch of Hebrew characters in a square, and you'll see highlighted at angles, you know, horizontally, vertically, these words in Hebrew. And then down at the bottom, it will say that this translates Lord Rael, or this translates son of Lear, or this translates coming judgment, or any number of things. And these Torah codes are presented as irrefutable evidence what are the odds, right? And this program will actually calculate the odds of finding these particular codes in this particular order or whatever. So how significant were those Torah codes to you, Michael, when you began to investigate, or even now, how significant are they to you?
And we have a picture of them that we'll put up while you're talking, Michael.
Sure. Yes, that's it right there. That's what they're presenting. Now, this is initially how I found them. Was I was doing research on Torah codes. I was not actually interested in entering a new congregation. I just happened to discover them because of these Torah codes. Now, here's the thing about these Torah codes. They are presenting it as evidence because the chances of them finding these codes in such a way that it would create these phrases, in these lists of phrases, is scientifically almost impossible, is what they are alluding to. Now, here's the thing, though. They are giving us graphics, images, but no videos as to how they are achieving these codes. But there is someone that they link to very frequently, and that person is a Torah code researcher. If anything, you can call him a Torah code master. He is a rabbi, and his name is Matit Yahu Glazerson. In English, that would be Matthew Glazerson. And he's an expert at Torah codes. Now, here's the interesting thing about Matit Yahu Glazerson is that he has gone against the congregation just as recently as 2016. But before that, I would say he was probably supportive because I think he may have made some videos about them before then. But his most latest videos of the congregation in 2016 are basically debunking videos. And if you go through those videos, look up Matit Yahu Glazerson. He doesn't just give images and pictures of Torah codes. He will show you how he gets those codes. Maybe not as thoroughly as I would like. No one does that for some strange reason. But at least he creates a video and he explains how he somehow gets it. He shows his search terms, him entering those terms, and then the results pop up. And if you go through those YouTube videos, you'll see the congregation providing negative comments saying, "How could you?" And here's the thing, though. Here's the only thing that I found strange. In those... This is why I kind of stuck with the congregation a little while, because I kind of want to investigate a little further about those Torah codes, is that Kelly Patrick responded, is like, "You keep misspelling his name in these videos. Enter the correct search term. You know you're not spelling his name correctly." And I did notice that in every one of those Torah code videos, Matit Yahu, master Torah code researcher, never did spell his name correctly. Could it be
Matashahu, a rapper?
I don't know. Could be.
Yes.
But good to go. So basically, he never did spell it correctly in any one of those videos. There's at least six videos I think he made about going against Lord Rael, but never spelling it correctly. So I'm thinking, is there something about this name that he found out about and he doesn't want to publish? Or did he just not read the comments? One or the other, I'm not sure. But I would like someone to... Basically, this is something that needs to be done. Someone needs to create a free software version of the Torah codes. Basically, no one knows how the Torah code software works because it's proprietary software. We don't have access to the source code. I am a free software developer. I would like there to be one. Because if someone documents how the code works...
Well, get ready.
Go ahead.
Because I did. So
I forgot about that.
You can actually purchase this software. It costs you $60. Actually, one of the guys that sells it is Dr. Danny Ben-Gigi out in Arizona, and he runs HebrewWorld.com. He's a good friend of mine. He taught me Hebrew actually back in 2003, 2004. There are two slides that you showed. Dave, if we could go back to just the first slide, if that's possible, not the second one. I just want to point to a couple of things. So what you're looking at here, of course,
His picture is not in the actual program. This is a screenshot of the program. It's called Keys to the Bible. And what you're looking at is, if you can read, if any, if your viewers can read Hebrew, you could actually read from right to left here the text, because this, all this is doing is laying out. So if you look in the upper right hand corner, third line down, far right, it says Al Ha'aretz, so like over the land or upon the land. So, I mean, this is just the text, the Hebrew text. But what they're doing is they're skipping. Now, it looks really convincing, right? Because, wow, what are the odds that the Passover 5778, which I suspect is, I mean, I don't know Jewish years as well as maybe I should, but I suspect it's probably somewhat recent, or the name Rael actually appears there in the text, or Le'er Yah, Yah being the, you know, the shortened form of Yahweh. What are the odds? And see how they're crossing over in the left-hand corner. You know, what are the odds that these things happen? Well, go to the next slide, if you would, please. This is a screenshot. When you get there, this is a screenshot. I didn't freeze, did I?
There you go.
Ah, there we go.
Okay. See,
this is a screenshot that I took this morning. And it looks really fuzzy to me, but hopefully to the viewers it's not. There in the center in Hebrew says J. Bowen, or Josh Bowen, HaMashiach is the Messiah. All right, so...
Holy, welcome everybody. Hold on 1 minute. You mean we have the Messiah on this show? Why didn't you tell us ahead of time? We would have made the place a little bit more. We would have cleaned. We would have had food.
Now,
am I going to hell, so, Josh?
Well, you know, I'll let you know afterwards. But no. If you look in the center, crossing it is Yahweh. The Tetragrammaton, the name of God in the Old Testament. Upper left-hand corner is the word godlike. You have Jerusalem, Shamayim for heavens. You have the first and the last on the right. You have eternal. These are all bona fide words that appear in this section of the Hebrew Bible. Now, that seems really amazing, right? Doesn't it? I mean, this would be really convincing, and I should probably start my own cult now. Actually, after I did this one, I found Steve McRae is Yahweh. So,
don't tell him that.
I just don't have followers. I have worshipers now. Thank you. Oh.
You have your own cult, Dr. Bowen, Digital Hammurabi. There is your new cult right there. It's already got a name.
There
packaged
you go.
Nicely.
And I would imagine that we could find Digital Hammurabi in the text. See, here's the thing. What happens is what this program does is you tell it skip a certain number of letters, right? Now you can be very specific and you can say skip every third letter. Or in my case, I said skip from 5 to 11,773. Anything in between, skip.
I've heard of that.
And find. And that's what you do. Mm. Now, that allows you to find your centerpiece, right? Of course, the thing I was searching for is J. Bowen HaMashiach, right? That's what I wanted to find. And I found it actually very, very quickly. And in several different places, as a matter of fact. Then there's a button, and again, it's blurry to me, but maybe you guys can see it. There's a button there that says find words. And if you click on that, it allows you to essentially scroll through and find all the different words that appear in that section of the matrix. So all those words, it'll show you which ones are there. And you can tell
that
one.
It sounds like it's an algorithm of some sort. I mean, because I was reading it on
non sequitur. Find us non sequitur.
Oh, that would be awesome. I was reading the equidistant letter sequencing that they use. But what I don't understand is if you're looking for a specific sequence of some kind, or looking algorithmically for something, because I don't call this a code. This I do think is a cipher, but whatever. But how I mean, literally, because they don't use, technically it is, but because they don't have vowels, and because there's just letters that we've translated into what we would think would be the English or Anglicized version of that word, you really can find anything you want by any search parameter just about, couldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, so there are certain words that are fixed, right? So HaMashiach is, that's how you say the Messiah. J. Bowen is Yod, Beit, Vav, Vav, Nun. That's how they would write it in a modern transliteration, and that's what I found. But again, it's in no way surprising. You're exactly right. What their the Hebrew text originally, and of course in modern Hebrew today, is primarily just consonantal, right? It's consonantal text.
Yeah, right.
They use matrix lexemes as Michael was talking about earlier, as these mothers of reading, these consonants that are used as vowels to elucidate the writing. But the point is, you can buy this program. It's called Keys to the Bible. Anybody can get it. And maybe Dr. Benghigi will get some business out of this. But it's HebrewWorld.com is where I got mine. You can get it on Amazon. I think he's actually the one that ships it from there. But again, it's $60 and you can run this program yourself. And so, Michael, I'm not a developer. I'm like, I don't know how it works.
That's fine. That's fine.
But
that's all right.
But you know, you could get it and look at it, I'm sure, because you seem extraordinarily clever, and figure out exactly how it's doing this. But that's what I mean. If you find your baseline word, which you can, and this is the other interesting thing about it, you search the entire Old Testament, right? From Genesis 1:1 to the end of Chronicles, which is how it's laid out. And then once you find it in there, then all you do is restrict your search to where you found it. And it looks like, oh my gosh, he just searched from Genesis 3:1 to Genesis 5:4, and in that short little span found that. But in reality, you're searching everything under the sun to just find that sequence, and then you just mirror it and narrow it down, you know, so that it's like a trillion to one shot, right?
Very true.
So I considered that when I got that, I consider that for me sufficiently debunked, and I can make a video about how I did it if anybody's interested in that. I can record that. It's it's actually pretty simple to do. But
just thought I'd throw it.
Hopefully, anybody that's watching from Lord Ryle's congregation right now, because this is one of the two linchpins. Right? This is one of the two things that are prophecy, and Michael's already talked about how the prophecy about the asteroid fell through, and really, it only takes one. Right, you have one prophecy that fails. That's a huge problem. But then the other is the Torah codes, and you know, I think there's sufficient evidence here that it's problematic, to say the least. So anyway,
I did forget to mention one thing. Well, before I mention that one thing, I just like to throw a cherry on top of the Torah codes. Apparently, Richard Ruff, who is the main leader of that congregation, he's Moses, apparently. In past life. And,
Richard Ruff sounds more like a porn star than it does an Old Testament figure.
This guy was like ex-military, worked in encryption and decryption in the military. That's what he did, right?
Yep.
And now he's Moses.
Apparently was. Yep. Apparently. And apparently somehow Raymond, I think when he was, before he became this entity that he thinks that he is, was on the Oprah show somehow, and they snapped a picture of him. And so they decided to make a Torah code on Oprah, and apparently she is a reincarnated version of John the Baptist. They have that. I have the page.
What? Oprah is John the Baptist?
I can't lie about this. They have it on their website. I was like, okay. Richard Ruff is Moses. Oprah Winfrey is John the Baptist.
Well, that's so. God is okay with sex change. God is okay with sex change.
Wait, am I the only guy here? Am I the only guy here? This is producer Dave. Am I the only guy here that finds an issue with a cryptographer looking for codes in the Torah?
That's why I brought it up. I mean, that's
kind of like A Beautiful Mind Gone Wrong. Like that old movie, A Beautiful Mind.
Yeah, that's the least thing that we need to worry about. Like that,
in and of itself
would be a problem.
Being John the Baptist
is John the Baptist, when you think Oprah is John the Baptist,
nobody's asking the elephant in the room, and I don't understand why. The question has to be asked: are these people actually insane, or they're just artists, or both?
They're con artists, and here's how.
Okay, because that's what I really want to know, because there's a huge difference there.
So let's talk about the God coin.
Oh, there we go. Yes.
Oh yes, please let's talk about your God coin.
I showed this to Steve this afternoon. I lost the dramatic commercial really that they have.
The God coin.
So,
a fiat God coin. Explain this to us, please.
So there's a video, man. And I about fainted, which was bad because I was driving when I heard it, because I was going through Michael Scoggins' playlist, and who's one of the clergy members. And he says, the Lord Rael has very graciously extended an offer to you to essentially trade in your worth U.S. dollars and you know, pounds and, you know, whatever else that you might have, for which are going to go out of use as soon as Lord Rael establishes his kingdom, which is coming. It's imminent, right? All that money is going to be completely useless.
So gracious.
So that you can get the God coin, right? Which is a coin, it's money with Lord Rael's face on it, at a discounted rate. You can trade in your worthless paper dollars, right?
Yeah, so which he's so benevolent.
You're getting ready to be worth nothing at a discounted rate. Act now. I mean, it really felt like an infomercial of sorts.
Can we give up on humanity? All that needed was Billy Mays coming back. Like, can he resurrect Billy Mays to be in that commercial?
And
you'll get another one free.
I thought
a second God coin for absolutely free.
Crypto at first too. I thought it was crypto coins. People are talking about crypto coins. This is not cryptocurrency. This is actually a gold coin, but it's fiat gold coin, which I don't understand because usually a gold coin is worth the value of the metal, right? That's why they have gold coins. What does it mean to have a gold coin that's worth more than the value of the metal? I don't understand how that works unless it's a total scam.
Well, here's how there's a lot of levels of deception here. There's even an Anunnaki tie-in. I'll tell you about it. But basically, gold on demand. It's gold on demand. That's how they got God, G-O-D. So gold on demand is what they call it.
Stop it.
Wow. That's brilliant. No, that's actually pretty good. That's brilliant. I got to give props for that one. Gold on demand.
They go pretty deep on this. Now, here's the Anunnaki tie-in. The Anunnaki tie-in is this. So apparently, their planet, their atmosphere, they basically went into the Sumerian research side of this. Probably looked at some Zechariah Sitchin's books. Basically, one of the Anunnaki planets were dying, and their atmosphere was deteriorating, and they needed to reseed that atmosphere somehow with some kind of base metal. They found out that gold was the best metal to use, but they could not extract it out of the mines themselves. So they needed to create a new living species to do it for them. These ETs are so advanced, why couldn't they create machines to do this? But basically, they created us to do it. I guess they wanted to test their limits and not use machines.
That's a brilliant tie-in. I have to give them credit. That's a
tie-in. They're like, hey, Anunnakis, you know, they created the human race to mine gold.
Right.
And I've come back. Where's my gold?
Didn't they put us with a different species or, you know, like something similar to Neanderthals? That's who they combined to make us. We are that a byproduct of that. Dr. Bolin?
Yeah, they used stop saying this like it's historical fact. I mean, they used Anunnaki DNA. Enki used of his own DNA.
Well, there's DNA. There's a mosaic that has DNA sculpted from Sumeria. Everyone knows that. It's the little plant thing. It's DNA. It's not a plant. It's DNA.
Yeah, I mean, I'll buy that for a God coin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Totally. That's going to be our official currency. So, should be the God coin.
So apparently you get enough of that digital currency, and eventually when the kingdom is established, they'll trade you those digital versions for the real gold. That's the hype.
That's kind of like selling like the back in, I don't know if they still have them, but they used to be able to get treasury bonds, right? And you would buy a treasury bond, and then the government would 20 years later give you, like, for every $10 you spent, they give you like 30 cents, right? So you invest like $5,000, you get $1.50 after 10 years. It was a really low yield, but that sounds like what it kind of is in some way.
It's so difficult for me because I my heart, like, in one sense, my heart kind of goes out to the people that fall for this kind of trickery. And then in another sense, it doesn't. In another sense, I want to like shake them and be like, how could you be like so gullible? Like, has he done anything, performed any miracles, anything spectacular to lend credence to the fact that he might actually be this, what does he put forth as evidence
There are no miracle videos, only judgment videos.
Wait a second. Now, that's not fair, you guys. Kyle, you were a recipient of one of the more recent judgments when the hurricane came. I mean, he brought that.
David, can you mute Dr. Bowen? I hate to do this, Dr. Bowen, but we have to do this to him. We have to do this to unruly guests, and I'm so sorry.
But Kyle survived, so obviously, you know, Lord Ryle, he blessed Kyle and put him under his wing of protection and shielded
him from the asteroid. We know how his aim is.
Did the asteroid hit you? No, there you go.
This makes it to where when somebody says, you know, that whole thing, I'm not going to stand too close to you, you're going to get struck by lightning. You don't have to move away anymore because nine times out of ten probably won't hit him. It'll hit the tree next door or something like that.
Now, I will say this about the miracles. He did have, at least at one time, a healing video. But it's been deleted. And all we have is an explanation for deletion. And
did it involve jelly juice?
He must be – he's a clumsy god. That's what he is. He tries, but he can't just like
– No idea.
What was the reason for deleting the video?
Yeah, he did a lot of stuff wrong for a deity. I don't know.
Okay, so the reason why he deleted that video was because apparently people were not sharing it enough, and he said they were just using it for themselves. He wanted people to, once they received the video, to make it go viral and to spread it. They're like, oh, they're holding on to this treasure. They're not letting it go and letting it spread. They're so greedy. I'm going to remove it. That's what
God. Said, so, of course. So God cares about his social media influence.
Why not? God needs an online presence too, right?
This literally the greatest group of individuals I have come across. Since I've been doing the show, we have talked to so many people and with so many different views and beliefs, and this is my absolute favorite because you have a deity that can't aim, cares about a social media following, and who uses emojis to explain why terrible events didn't happen.
God is a male in this case. Men can't aim. We all know this. Women have been telling that for us for years. Second of all, in this day and age, I think that it's important to have an online media presence, even for a deity. I mean, I'm not faulting this guy too much for that.
I mean, look, I think the thing that really got me, the first couple of days that I was watching these videos was, William Scoggins preaching a sermon said, it's, you know, if you've ever heard a pastor say something like, you know, enough to just, drop a dollar in the offering plate. Or it's not enough to just, you know, serving God doesn't mean just coming to church on Sunday. He said, serving God is more than just subscribing to his Twitter account.
Oh.
Interesting.
And you know what's funny? Somebody in the chat just said, is God on Twitter? Someone in the chat said, is God on Twitter?
Yes, I've seen him on there, actually. There's a couple of different versions, actually. And I've seen Jesus, a few different Jesuses on there, too. So, yep.
Michael, you haven't been kicked out of this group yet. Do you think you will be now?
I don't know. I better hold on because it might happen.
I'm almost positive it probably will, and we do apologize for that. But you can figure out a way to get back in, I'm sure.
But how do we know which God on Twitter is the right God on Twitter?
Obviously, the one that says the things that you like the most.
The one that strikes you down with a hurricane, that's the one that's legit.
It's very graphic.
Or tornado.
So,
or
asteroid. We're about at the 90-minute mark. Go ahead, Dr. Bowen.
No, go ahead. You were getting ready to say something about the 90-minute mark.
I was just going to say, did you have any other directions that you wanted to go, Dr. Bowen?
Yeah, I mean, there was, and I know we don't have an awful lot of time, but there was something, Michael, that to sort of shift gears just a little bit. Michael sent me a link to a project that he's working on, which I actually found really interesting. And I know, again, I know we don't have a lot of time to talk about it, but maybe he could just give a brief overview, because I do find it fascinating. You're creating a new edition of the Bible. Is that a fair way to edition's probably not the right word, but maybe you could just talk about that and maybe tell people where they can go to see it.
Well, it's not online right now, but I will send you a link when it comes online. Majority of Bibles are based off of the Masoretic text, and majority of the Bibles are based on very young manuscripts, but not the oldest manuscripts. So the goal of the project is to, for the first time, create a Bible that is based on all the oldest manuscripts that we have to date. We're talking about the Dead Sea Scrolls, because with Dead Sea Scrolls you have an almost complete Bible. We're talking about the Septuagint. We're talking about the Samaritan Pentateuch. We're talking about also textual variants that are in other texts that no one else is using. Textual variants that, I'm telling you, they're going to give you some amazing different readings in the text that no one's ever seen before. And this is basically a new type of Bible. In fact, you can't even really even call it a Bible. It goes beyond just the Bible.
Because
I make a suggestion.
You might have to make a suggestion, Michael. You might have to make a suggestion to you. Leave out all that the hateful shit. Pardon my language, but leave out all the hateful shit that happened in the first version. You know, all that killing and judgment and all that. Leave all that out.
Here's something interesting about the Old Testament. The New Testament is the good news, right? But how do we know what the good news is without first knowing what the bad news is? So the interesting thing about publishing them both together is I'm going to be doing an expose on the Old Testament. A lot of people have never seen this side of the Old Testament before. I really wish I could show you the file and show you the research that I'm doing. The Masoretic texts, they date back to the 10th century. And what they've done is they've added vowels to the language. They did not exist before then. These vowels change the pronunciation and the meaning of words. If I could just show you even one word, you would be shocked. It would change a key passage, a key word, and your idea of the scriptures would change immediately in that one word. Because what happens is you have one Hebrew word, right? And that Hebrew word, if you can see my finger, will maybe appear in another verse, right? So you have one verse here and another verse here. Each have the same word, but maybe they'll have different vowel marks on them. These different vowel marks will give this Hebrew word one meaning and this Hebrew word a different meaning. But if you remove the marks, they become the same word. But because these marks are on them, people think that they are different words. And what I've been doing is collating these words, removing the marks, and restoring the original rendition of these words, doing deep research on the Hebrew Strong's Concordance. And you basically, no one has ever read the actual scriptures yet with the original ancient rendering before the Masoretic marks. And
can you give us a spoiler? What some of the changes that you found, like how it would alter the original, what we consider the original in any way? Like, how does it change?
Okay. This one is going to sound like a stretch. Let me just pull up the file real quick so you know I'm not
We've already covered the stretch, Michael. Don't worry about that. Oprah becoming John the Baptist.
We're long past the
stretch. That's
stretch
right there. We're way past the stretch mark.
Well, good to go. Well, we're going to get right into it. So,
is there words like psyched, just kidding, stuff like that in there? That would be kind of cool.
Kyle, you just used Oprah and stretch mark in the same sentence. That's not very nice.
So here's a good one.
Don't fuck with
me. I'm sure you guys might want to look at it after the show is done. But if you can go to BibleHub.com, and I'm sure you'll be shocked. You might be. But this is just one example of what I'm trying to do here. Go to BibleHub.com and look at the Hebrew Strong's Concordance for Hebrews 7160 is a mapped word.
My computer's not used to going to Bible Hub. It's used to going to a different kind of hub.
What was the verse? So if you're good at Bible Hub there and you're good with Hebrew Strong's Concordance, the Hebrew Strong's number is 7160. So let me just pull that up.
I'm just going to let you go ahead. if you need help navigating the other hub, that's where you can call me in. This one I'm not too good at.
So basically, Hebrew Strong 7160 shows up only four times in the Bible, and it means shown. And it's basically talking about Moses' face. Moses' face was shining. But apparently, there are two other Hebrew Strong's words. They actually come right after that one. So there's 7160, it means shown. 7161 means horns. And 7162 means horns. Now, 7160 means shine, shows up four times. 7161, which means horns, 76 times. And 7162 means horns, shows up 14 times. So we have, let's see here, 94 verses. Three of those verses, it means horns. I mean, it means shine. But in 91 of those verses, it means horns. But they are all the same word, just different accentuation marks, different vowel marks. But if you remove the vowel marks, basically, Moses had horns.
I think I'm already liking this version of the Bible better already.
But here's the interesting thing, though. When Moses came down and received the Ten Commandments, the congregation of Israel, with Aaron included, they were afraid of Moses. They were afraid of his appearance. Now, here's the thing, though. If you believe the Masoretic translation, that his face was shining, that it was radiant, that it was beautiful, you tell me this. Is the congregation of Israel going to be afraid of a beautiful face? A shining face, it's radiant, it's beautiful?
Depends on how beautiful. I sometimes get afraid of Channing Tatum's face all the time.
So logically, it just does not make sense. But if you look at the other 91 occurrences of that word, it starts to make sense that maybe they were really afraid because he had horns.
Nobody's asking me, but I'm gonna also give a little bit of advice, and Michael, take this because I like you, and I've liked interacting with you, and I actually think you've put a ton of work into this. I've looked through your I'm not good with computers, but the HTML file, is that what it is? The file that you sent me. You know, I've looked through it pretty extensively. I admire this, and there's never, ever going to be a time that I think I'd want to quench somebody's drive, particularly a Marine's drive, right? You can't quench a Marine's drive, right? I would say that I've been doing Hebrew now 15 years. It's been a while. The reason that when I interacted with you, I asked you if you'd learned Hebrew, there's a reason for that. And that is that languages, particularly ancient languages, can be kind of complicated. For example, in what we're talking about here in Exodus 34 with Moses' face shining, the verb karan is, you're right, it doesn't occur all that often. But take it into something more, pedestrian. The word davar. Davar means word, diber. If you same consonants, can mean the PL form, he spoke. Dever is a plague. So the way that these Semitic languages work, these Akkadian, Arabic, Hebrew, Aramaic, Syriac, they have a triconsonantal root. That's how these things generally work. So the three consonants per word. And they adjust the vowels in order to make, in order to change the meaning of the word. Now, oftentimes there's something consistent about the different words. For example, davar, to speak, or a word, something spoken. Those are all things that have to do with dalet bet resh. But there are different vowel points. What I would suggest is, as you do this, really take some time and learn Hebrew. I know I mentioned this to you. I've got a Learning Biblical Hebrew video series on our channel, Digital Hammurabi. And for anybody else that's out there wanting to learn Hebrew, particularly now that we're talking about this really cool Hebrew stuff, it's free. And you have access to me to ask questions, whatever. And of course, there are lots of people that teach Hebrew, I'm sure. But just be careful. Again, I don't want to squash anything that you're doing here, because I think it's actually really important that we have people that have a strong drive. But just be careful, because there is a reason that we translate the way that we do. There is a reason that we use different vowel points. We use different vowels with these different roots. Because, for example, in the passage that you're talking about, it wouldn't actually make any sense to say horn. Because it would require the plural form. You would have to have karanim, where here it's just karan, it's kof, resh, nun. So it wouldn't fit the context. But I see what you're doing, and I understand it, and I applaud you. But just do the due diligence that I know a Marine would do, and learn the language. Because I think when you do it, you might leave some ideas behind. But I suspect that you will find a lot more that you can actually really, with your tenacity and your drive, you can probably really grapple with and make some real headway for you and for all of us. That's my spiel.
Maybe he only had one horn.
Can I ask you a question on that, on the Hebrew real quick? Because I'm always curious about this, and I never quite understood the distinction between the Hebrew and like the Ashkenazi Yiddish versions of things. What is the Yiddish? What actually is the distinction between Yiddish and like Hebrew? Because my mom would teach me, like trying to teach me like a little bit of Yiddish would be like a kepala would be in my head, right? But Mazel Tov is Hebrew, but they're always related to each other. But I don't know the distinction.
Yeah, I mean, Yiddish, I'm not a Yiddish expert now, but it's an amalgamation of a dialect of German, as I understand it.
Well, Yiddish is when you get like scared or spooked.
Yes.
Yeah, Yiddish is a language. But
that too.
It's spooked? What does that mean? What is spooked? I don't know what that means.
Yiddish. Slavic, you know what I mean? Like somebody jumps, don't be so Yiddish.
That's a Jewish version of being scared. Gotcha. Yeah.
You guys at home got that. I know you did.
One person live chat laugh.
Good. That's all I need. Just one.
That's it. One. Just one.
Well, this was fantastic. I love this. I think that I would love, if you're somebody out there that is actively in Lord Ryle's congregation, please come on, because I have so many questions. I have more questions than I normally do with our
this answered nothing. This was great.
This was a great introduction to, I think, what a broader question that needs to be asked is, what does it take to get someone to believe this level of I don't even know what to call it.
Bizarreness?
Deception's not good enough. Bizarre's closer. Bullshit. There we go. Bullshit.
There we go. Okay.
That's the Hebrew word.
So,
bullshit in Hebrew.
Right. Oy vey. Oy vey. So I'm going to let you guys take the opportunity to make any last-minute thoughts that you have. If you have, I know Digital Hammurabi does, plug your channels, your social media, where people can, you know, if they want to find out more about you, follow you, ask you questions, all that stuff, if you're interested. So, Michael, we'll start with you.
Well, I don't have any questions, but I'm actually glad you guys brought me onto the show. I think I actually have learned a lot. And I'm definitely going to take your advice, Josh, about learning more Hebrew. Definitely is my goal. For me, my personal opinion, I don't think anybody should even consider writing a Bible or making one unless they have an understanding of those languages. So I do want to learn them. And, of course, everyone's opinions here were pretty awesome. Just thought I'd share that.
We're going to have to bring you back. I like you, Michael. All right.
Yeah, this is good. You're a cool guy. I enjoyed this. Thank you.
That's off.
Semper Fi.
I have one question before we get to Dr. Bowen.
And thank you for your service, by the way. Nobody's thanked him for his service.
Yes, thank you for your service. But where are you? You can just, like, if you don't want to answer, that's fine too. But I'm just curious, in dealing with all of this, being in the middle of the cults and seeing what all goes on and seeing the absolute deception, where are you in terms of like faith now? Are you actually what are you trying to find there? And maybe this will be a good one to bring you back on later on down the road, but just kind of give us a preview of where you are in that space now.
Well, to start off, a year ago, I left home just so that I can start this journey. Specifically on a quest to figure out what is the truth and are Christians insane or are they actually believing in the truth? So on this journey for literally about a year now, and not even a month ago, I was no longer a Christian, but I still wanted to study the Bible. But after seeing all the corruptions in it, and after seeing the deceptions from my pastor and from Lord Rael and his congregation, I thought, you know, enough's enough. Let's create a real Bible. Let's go to the source, because no Bible translators are all. We have access to hundreds of manuscripts, all the Dead Sea Scrolls. We have the Septuagint. We have so many manuscripts, but no one wants to compile them all together into a single Bible yet. I would like to learn what would be the original meaning of these words when someone does that. So currently that's cool. Where I'm on right now.
So once you get it completed, you'll be a cult leader. So we've actually had a cult leader before they became a cult leader. This is fantastic. Somebody in the live chat actually had a really good suggestion. And I think we should do this, Steve. Somebody in the live chat suggested having Michael back with Dr. Jones. And I think that would be a great
conversation. Yeah. I'm okay with that. That'd be cool. I mean, Dr. Jones has said he's going to be freed up sometime this month or so. So I'll reach out to him again.
Cool. All right, Dr. Bowen, the one half of Digital Hammurabi. We should get the other half in so we can say hello.
Yeah. The other half we like better. No, I'm just kidding.
The better half.
She's actually in the live chat. Yeah. She's enjoying this as well.
Oh, yeah. Get in here, Meg. I was going to think of a clever name, but it didn't come to me in time. That's the part about live shows. If you get this one window, and if you don't hit it, you have to back off.
There she is.
Hi. Good evening. Now here's your dose of cuteness for today, world. Oh, and there's your dose of fat material for later. So why don't you go ahead and tell us about your channel and put it out there so that people can go and subscribe.
Well, we are Digital Hammurabi. This is Megan, Dr. Josh, and as I mentioned at the beginning of the stream, we try to bring the ancient Near East to, you know, people that don't have the psychosis that we have.
That leads us to spend a decade plus in university.
Indeed. So Megan works primarily in Sumerian and Akkadian royal inscriptions from the 3rd and 2nd millennia, mm-hmm. Which is amazing. And I work.
I think that's a very generous assessment of Royal Inscriptions.
You're really hot. So, and stop, so it's pathetic.
You're going over the limit, okay?
And
my glucose levels going up right now. Okay, that's all.
I just got diabetes. I just got diabetes.
I'm telling you, gonna need some insulin.
I wrote my dissertation in on Sumerian literary and liturgical texts, and from the second millennium. And of course, I do a lot of work in Hebrew and Sumerian and Akkadian. Blah blah blah. Okay, so our channel, Digital Hammurabi, is
the best channel in the whole world.
We, I'm teaching Sumerian grammar class.
It's at least the second best channel in the whole world.
It's got potential.
Indeed. Well, you guys created it, so, you know.
Well, no, you guys created it.
We were like the midwives. You guys gave birth to your channel. We were just the midwife that kind of facilitated it.
We held it and like bounced it around and said, "Oh, you're so cute. You're going to be great." And then sent you on your way.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, we appreciate it. But I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I was just going to say, I really appreciate Michael coming on here and, spending the time to talk about some, I think, kind of personal things and taking some of my advice. And if there's any way that I can help in your Hebrew journey, please let me know, or any other ancient languages that you want to learn. I'd love to help. But thank you guys very much for having us on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Steve, any super chats?
I think we just have one, and it is from Fostering Atheism. Actually, for $5.
You have a couple.
I'm refreshing. I have two. Okay. Fostering Atheism. Steve needs new socks. This is true. I'm actually barefoot right now. It's actually kind of hot in here, so I am barefoot. Thank you. I do need new socks. Michael Werbel, $5. Chicago Railroad, Elwood Blues, A Mission from God. Coincidence?
Ooh, wow. God.
We're going to look for patterns in everything now. Let's just do that.
Well, Mother Megan, full of grace. How many Hail Megans must we say this week since Dr. Bowen is the Messiah? Actually, Joshua Christ is now your new name. We can drop Dr. Bowen, Joshua Christ.
I like that. The godless iron. Oh,
nice.
Yep.
Well, yeah. He's not godless anymore. He has you, right?
And we will see you back here tomorrow for what do we have tomorrow? Oh, yes, mind readers. Jonathan Pritchard, who used to be a mentalist, he is now, what he does is he teaches people how not to get kind of caught up in those kind of scams. So he's going to actually cold read us and then go through how people do that. It's going to be fascinating. So check us out for that. And we're going to leave you, instead of me saying something very witty and life altering, a quote that you keep, like I do every time we close out this show, we're going to let our good friend, the Godless Iowan, make a statement for us and show our appreciation to Josh Christ. So without further ado.
I'm sorry, you guys.
Absolutely brilliant.
That's not
that
bad.
Look is faffable. I gotta admit, that is a faffable look right there.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Non sequitur, your facts are uncoordinated.